unless you, not unless you, not unless you hide the peanut butter.
This is Jai Hitchcox, and you're listening to the Jai and Woody Show.
Okay, welcome to the Jai and Woody Show. We've got an action-packed podcast this week. I'll introduce our guest in a minute, but first of all, Jai Hitchcock. Couple of tries again at the weekend, mate.
Yeah, mate, little Michael Dublé on return. Hopefully. Who's running the Our League app these days? If I don't get try the round, it's Jonesy.
Andrew Henderson's doing a bit,
oh,
isn't he?
And,
yeah, we'll have a word.
Yeah, I should get it. One of them.
Yeah, you should win some. I did the shoulder pull-up.
Mate, pulled up good. I didn't make a single tackle. Actually, I did.
Standard.
Yeah, I did make a tackle. Dragged old QLT into touch.
I know all about that. I know all about that not making tackles.
No, it was good. Good to be back.
That actually does introduce us to our guest very well. Carl Fitzpatrick. He goes by the name now. He's also known as the White Don King.
Yeah,
Scotland's nemesis. Let's get that one in first. Scotland's nemesis at international level. But Carl Fitzpatrick, welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having us. Yeah, I think, did you nickname me the White Don King, or was it Alex?
Yeah.
In fact, or was it Aaron Bower? I think he's the one that actually labelled that.
What, the journo?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I've got no idea about this, so what is the White Don King?
Basically, obviously, with the marketing and promotions we've been doing at Warrington this year, we've been thinking outside the box and creating a bit of controversy and getting that media cut through, and he said, I think you're the White Don King, so... Yeah, I'm not too sure if that's a compliment or not.
Yeah, well, I think it's a compliment. I mean, back in his day, Don King was, at the pinnacle of boxing. Yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah, so just don't go that far.
I'm not sure about that one. He's an unbelievable promoter. I agree with that. But yeah, a bit of an unsavory character.
Yeah, it's, because they've started calling me now the White Mike Tyson, because I've been seen with you that much. So it's,
he had a bit of an unsavory past as well, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
A couple of tigers, bit of a... Well, we can't go too far into it.
Yeah.
He's actually... No, have you seen his stand-up, Mike Tyson's stand-up? It's actually pretty insightful. Yeah, got a bit of emotion.
He's a changed character,
isn't
he, Tyson?
Yeah.
He's completely changed.
Yeah, because he runs a big marijuana farm
in
California.
Yeah, he smokes a lot.
He's mellowed out, you know what I mean?
He does the podcast. He speaks a lot about his marijuana company and stuff.
Yeah.
Proper chilled out, but...
Yeah, I wonder why. We will go. I want to touch on that marketing straight away, because they do say that content is the currency of the internet, and Warrington have it by the buckload. Is that a more recent... thing over the last 2 years where you've sort of...
Probably this year, Jai, to be honest with you. There's probably been two seminal moments. One's when I visited USC Europe down in London, spent a couple of days there, spoke about their business model. And I mean, look at USC in the last 20 years, how that's grown incredible. Do you mean, you think 20 years ago it didn't exist?
Yeah.
Now it's one of the biggest sports in the world. Do you know what I mean? As a household name, Conor McGregor, incredible. They spoke about the brutality of their sport and how they put the spotlight on that. And that's something we've done. Also, as well, the importance of rivalries and controversies and not shying away from that.
Mm.
They said, look, if they have a technically, tactically gifted fighter, but there's no charisma, there's no backstory, there's no rivalry they can hook or build upon, well, they're not really interested. They're interested in rivalry and controversy. So that's been one of our approach this year, and so far it's yielded a lot of success.
Yeah, we touched on this last week with Anthony Gelling. Obviously he's a bit of a character online, but we sort of brought up the point where, you know how you get NFL players like the Odell Beckhams and then the LeBron Jameses where they're really layering up after a play, and I don't think that there's not much of that in rugby league, and is it because it comes from the working men's background and you're sort of seen as, you know, you're a bit of a dickhead if you do that?
Yeah, I think so, and I think it's through the coaches as well. I remember when I was playing and Carl Harris and salute no lurry celebrations to go over there and give him a firm handshake. But you're absolutely right. It's that we've got to be different. We've got to get that cut through. And I think it is to do with me northern working class towns that they don't like to put themselves out there. And I've said this previously. I think one of our values of rugby league, which is great, is we're very humble. But I think it's been counterproductive as well. I think we're too humble and don't like to shout about it. Because when you look at the sport, rugby league, it's an incredible game. In my opinion, it's got the best athletes in the world playing the game. It's gladiatorial. You've got to be super fit. The skill set that's required, it's very varied. You've got to be quick. Do you know what I mean? It's an unbelievable game. It's an unbelievable product. But we need to put it on a bigger platform and showcase it to a bigger audience.
Yeah, I think the real issue is to say if I score a really good try in the corner and I layer up, the fans love it, right? But then we get to the other end.
Knock on the next tackle.
then you're the most. That's it, isn't it? You got the other end and you drop a catch and they score. Your coach gives it to you because you shouldn't have been layering up, and then your own fans start giving it to you, and you're obviously copping it from the opposition as well. So
I think that's the fear in it, and we touched on it about the social media, about, and we'll go into it later a bit more, but. You know, Lee Radford saying they used it as motivation. Yeah. Now, you can build a game up, and if you're on the end of a good hiding or you lose that game, people will start criticising the social media. But then once you win a game and it's had a big build-up, you get a pat on the back. And you I don't think you'll ever win on that aspect.
Look, I think that narrative as well is determined by the victor. I think, in fact, it might be your club, Jai. Bradford played Halifax in the Challenge Cup game, and obviously Halifax won. And when the camera panned to the changing rooms, there was a post up, a social media post up, if I recall.
Yeah.
But nothing was said about that because obviously Bradford got beat.
Yeah.
So in terms of external factors impacting a game and outcome, I think it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Let's take it right back though, because I think I know Kerr personally, and he's got a very inspiring story for me, because it's not all been plain sailing for you. I know you sat at the top now, you're Warrington CEO, but you do have a good story to tell, starting from your amateur rugby career, how you got into the professional game, and also, you know, you rise up after you finish playing, up until you from the welfare officer to marketing, now you're the CEO in very, very short space of time. And just tell us where it did all start for you, because you're a Wigan lad, but you did play for a Lee amateur team in Leeds.
Yeah, well, actually, I started my first amateur club was Hindley. My dad took me along to Hindley Giants, it was at the time, and as you know, where you're coming from, Wigan, it's rugby league is like a religion. It's just what you did. It's not as if you did it, it's when you did it. So my dad took me to Hindley, played there for a period of time, and then that team folded, and then went over to St Williams for a short period, and over to Lee East. And then from there again, team folded, and I went to Wigan St Pat's. A bit of a common theme there, isn't there? There's three or four amateur clubs I joined and folded. I signed for Widnes at, I think, around about 15 years of age. And it's actually funny because I remember a lot of players signed professional forms before myself. And Warrington at the time, they were snapping up a lot of kids, always the big kids as well. I know yourself, you signed for Warrington, and they ended up signing Phil Finney instead of myself. Said, "Oh, you're never going to be big enough." Jim Reader was the scout at the time.
Funnily enough, Fitz here, sorry to interrupt you there, but he said exactly the same thing about me. And Darryl Vanderveld came watching. Jim Reader said, "No, don't sign him. He's never going to be big enough." And Darryl Vanderveld said, "Nah, I'm signing him."
Yeah.
And
but Warrington had a bit of a reputation back then, didn't they? Of I call them men-child, signing men-child, the guys that developed at 15, 16 years of age, but then post that don't really grow. And because they've relied on the sheer size, strength and power at that age, that when the other kids catch up to them and they develop, they've no other skill set to help them to progress, and they stagnate and don't progress. So at 15 years of age, I was concerned that, I hadn't signed professional forms. There was a lad at our age, you recall, Paul, a guy called Daryl Lace. I think he signed for Wigan at 11 years of age, got a pro contract at that age.
Wow.
He had a moustache when he was 12.
It was, again, he was a classic man child, he developed as 11, 12 year old, and then didn't grow thereafter. Yeah, so signed for Widnes. So upon leaving school, I joined Widnes's ranks, played there for 4 or 5 years, something like that. Played a little bit of first team. Probably wasn't as professional as I should have been, I'll be honest with you. Went in to see the coach. I thought I was getting an upgrade, and I got my P45.
No way.
So got moved on. Played a handful of first team games. But to be honest, probably the best thing that ever happened to me. I had to go work with my dad and my brother in construction. So one minute I'm a professional rugby league player, and the next I'm working on the motorways. Job that we was doing, we was putting, do you know the power box inside of the motorway, the grey boxes that power the matrix? It was building steps up to that. It was brutal work, brutal. So I did that for a period of time, and I joined Swinton Lions playing part-time, obviously. And working full time. Then I got an opportunity to go to Salford, did okay at Swinton, they picked me up. At the time it was the under 21s, so I was eligible for that age group. So went over, played at Salford in the under 21s, again working full time, just playing part time. And then Carl Harrison come on board, they moved on, Steve McCormack. So Steve actually signed me and then got sacked a couple of days later. So I was the final nail in his coffin.
You beauty.
I finished him off. I went okay in the under 21s, and then I met Steve Sims. Steve said, happy are you going? I'm going to give you a full-time contract. I was like, yes, do you know what I mean? I was dreams. Ever since being a kid, I wanted to be a Super League player. I thought, this is my opportunity. I'm not gonna let it go. And I was going away at the weekend. It's Luke, when you come back, said, we'll sort it out. I said, right, okay. So I went away, come back after the weekend, went to see him, and he said, we've no money left. I was like, oh, you were joking. He said, yeah, I like how you've played, but unfortunately, it wasn't salary cap, it was finances. Because Salford at that time, I think, had just been relegated. Mm. So I said, right, okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I said, I'll train the full pre-season without pay. I'll do the full pre-season. And then at the end of the pre-season, if you think I'm worth a contract, you give me a contract. So I train the full pre-season without pay. I do extras in the morning. I do extras, I was the last to leave training. I go on my day off. I basically just made it virtually impossible for them not to give me a contract come the end of the pre-season. Get to the pre-season, fair enough, they was impressed and said, right, okay, love your attitude. And I got a contract, albeit it was only $7,000, full-time contract. However, it got me foot on the ladder, and then managed to have a half decent Super League career. Luke, I was just an average player, but I was fortunate to get the opportunity to get the foot on the ladder and play a few Super League games.
I think you're a typical rugby league player, though, when you say you had an average career, because I think you do yourself a bit of a disjustice there. I know,
probably below average then.
Yeah, I know what that feels like.
But I think you do, because and I think it's quite a common theme with rugby players. You don't really say, you know, you did better than you did.
The only person that walks around and says they're a legend is you.
Yeah, there's only me and Gary Schofield, we call ourselves the legends. But, you know, you had a good career. You know, you was an Ireland international. You know, you was probably Salford's best player from 2003 up to 2010.
Yeah.
Dynamic fullback, always put your hurt on the line. You had a couple of seasons. I think you were linked with Wigan 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, did you ever have the opportunity to move on then from Salford?
Bradford came close a couple of times, Paul, real close. And the first one was when I was at Widnes. I was playing in the academy. I was performing well for Widnes. We didn't have a bad academy side, actually. And Matt Elliott and Brian Noble actually come to my house to discuss about moving over to Bradford. Obviously, I was still under contract to Widnes at the time. However, then I approached Widnes and asked Luke, could I be released or do you need to be transferred? And Graham West was the coach at that time, and he just said, no, we're not letting you go. Funnily enough, Bradford actually then went on to sign Paul Deacon, who had an unbelievable career at Bradford.
He had a bad career, didn't he?
Not a bad option there.
He was Oldham. I think Oldham had financial difficulties at the time. But yeah, he ended up picking up Paul and selling himself.
I think Cromie bankrupted him, didn't he? I think Martin Crompton bankrupted him.
Yeah, I think that's the case. But yeah, and I was in discussions with Wigan a couple of times. Funny, actually, because they ended up going with Richie Mathers, who obviously now works at Warrington Wolves in the commercial department. And he didn't last long there either, did he, to be honest with you? But no, Luke, really enjoyed my time at Salford. It was. Do you mean to have a Super League career was everything I dreamed of as being a kid? And do you mean to play professionally and get paid for it and get well paid for a period of time was fantastic.
You don't get called Scotland's nemesis at international level, mate, when you're an Ireland international. You must have had something about you. But moving on from your playing career,
yeah.
You went into coaching then. You was at Preston Grasshoppers.
Yeah.
You was doing a bit of the S&C. And at my time at Warrington when I was playing, you came down and did a placement for the S&C. So tell us what your thought process was.
So in my late 20s, I went to university to do went home and studied at Leeds Met University and did a sports performance degree. So at the end of training, I then travel over to Leeds and do my degree. I had ambitions and an appetite to work in the performance department of a rugby league club, and that's why I enrolled on a sports performance degree. So I finished playing at the end of 2010 and approached Tony Spim and said, look, can I have an opportunity to work within the performance department? I don't want paying. I'll show you my worth, what I can bring to the organisation. I just want an opportunity. And the reason I did that was when I reflected back on my career at Salford, the reason I got my foot in the door and got a full-time opportunity was I showed what I can do. I know my work ethic, the value of that and what I could bring to the organisation. So I joined Warrington, I think it was around about October, November time, in 2010 to help out in the performance department, as they were supporting the conditioners. So I went from earning a decent Super League salary to earning nothing, basically. And I didn't get paid for 3 or 4 months. And then an opportunity presented itself with Brian Carney, a good friend of ours, obviously. He stepped away from the play welfare role and told me, he said, "Look, I know you've not come in to do this role initially, but I think you'd be suited to this." And to be honest with you, I probably wasn't enjoying working in the conditioning department. I thought, I'm not sure if this is me and I want to do this for the rest of my life or the rest of my professional career. So when Tony offered me that opportunity, I jumped at it, and then my career just progressed from there after.
Do you know what? There's a lot to build. That's why I say it's a success story. It's an inspirational story, because kids, I'm not tying all kids with the same brush, but there's a lot of kids now, they want it on a plate. They're not actually willing to do something for nothing to get that foot in the door and say, you know what, I'll prove myself. Yeah. And, you know, we speak about it every week, I think, about the kids, don't we, Jai?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's for free in life, is it? And it takes some kahunas, really, to say, look, I'll prove me worth before you pay me. But it's pretty inspiring stuff, isn't it? I mean, not many people can do it.
Don't get me wrong, it was difficult. 2010, do you know what I mean? 2010 was a bleak Christmas. I've got a wife and 2 children.
Yeah.
And I've been earning a decent Super League salary to earning zilch. You know what I mean? And my wife at the time, you know what I mean? She was just a lecturer. Now she's progressed as well. But she believed in me as well and supported the move. And it was difficult. But as I said, I believe that if I was given the opportunity, got my foot in the door, and they showed what I could bring to the organisation, that would be rewarded. And found out, fortunately.
So there's a big belief system in you that, you know, what if you put your mind to something, that you'll achieve it?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I think that's what... I ended up carving out a Super League career because of that. Do you know what I mean? I was never the biggest of blokes, as I mentioned earlier, about they said I wasn't big enough at 15, and then there's no money left. So it was there's an element of resilience in my makeup, I suggest.
It's interesting when you hear them little things like I've been told I'm not big enough. I've actually had a guy tell me that I would actually never ever make it as a professional rugby league player, and it was just a little comment and a passing comment with someone that I respected. Though I was doing work experience in a gym one time, and he said, "Look, you're too small, you'll never make it." And that always stuck with me. And I actually ran into the bloke about 8 years after, and I said, "Look, I played NRL," and I just sort of rubbed it in his face. But he was about 60 or 70 kilos bigger than me, so I didn't rub it in his face too much. But do you think that, like, as you said, when you were promised a contract, you went away and you came back and they said, "Well, look, no, we don't have it." Do you think them little things are the driving factor, that sort of snowball effect into creating your resilience and your drive today?
Yeah, I think so, Joe. I think my biggest influence on my career and my life is my parents. Do you know what I mean? I'm your absolute stereotypical working class lad from Wigan.
Yeah.
My dad worked on a building site till 72. My mum worked in a factory all her life. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Never missed a day's work. So they've instilled in me those real values of work ethic and work and how far that can get you. And also, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to go to a building site. I experienced that when I played at Swinton. When Widnes moved me on, I did not want to go back to that. Do you know what I mean? I seen what my brother did, what my dad went through. Do you know what I mean? Working, grafting. Do you know what I mean? Unbelievable hours for probably not a lot of pay as well. Mm. There's no way I wanted to go down that route. And that was one of the things that inspired me and motivated me to progress.
To be fair though, Fitzy, you probably, you know, work longer hours now than what if he was actually on a building site.
Yeah, it is true. And people say about a work-life balance.
Yeah.
For me, there isn't. It's just all in one. All in one. And I have to say, I think I said this on Alex's show, and I mean this, there's probably not one single day that goes by that I don't do something related to Warrington Wolves. And I include Christmas Day on that.
Yeah.
Even when I'm away, it drives me Mrs. mad at the side of the pool. I'm on my phone, emailing, jotting, making notes. But that's just how I am. And I think I'm very fortunate in the position that I've currently got. Do you know what I mean? It's such a fantastic position in a sport that I love. I'm doing something I really enjoy. I'm not going out putting scaffold up, laying bricks, or putting flags down the side of the motorway.
It's not so much work when you enjoy it, absolutely, is it? I mean, no one enjoys laying down concrete. And I did that for a couple of years, and trust me, if you haven't done it, it's not bloody fun. But no, when you're doing something you enjoy, it's not really work, is it? It's not the same.
No, and you know, we were saying last week, to, you know, Anthony Gellin was talking about career after rugby, and you know, you've got to find something that's going to challenge you, but something that you also enjoy as well. And, you know, I actually enjoy the challenge of my job and what I need to bring to the company. And I think if you can find that, like you say, if you find something you enjoy, you'll never work a day in your life, as they say. And, you know, I won't say I have the same passion as I did for when I played rugby, and I probably don't. My values have changed a lot now, so I probably wouldn't sacrifice as much as I did now as from when I played rugby. But, you know, you do have to enjoy what you do, and you've got to see some form of a challenge.
I will say as well, Paul, and I've mentioned this to you previously, and I genuinely believe this, probably for more sports people, but in particular, top rugby league players, the guys that have played at the top level, that to get to the top of the game in rugby league, I mean, the innate traits and characteristics that you guys have, overcoming adversity, professionalism, willingness to receive feedback and adapt, those characteristics are so valuable within any business and organisation that if you then direct your innate traits and characteristics in a different vocation, you will be successful. No doubt about that. No doubt.
I'd love rugby league to just move into a more transparent stage of, I don't know how you would put it, just so people can get more of an insight into what it really is to be a rugby league player, because a lot of people see the game as you show up, you train a couple of days a week and then you're out of there, and then you show up and you play and you earn a big wage. But that's really not the case, is it? Because you've got a personal life.
The big thing, Jay, on that is you think about the feedback, right? Okay, so you have your appraisal every Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, whenever that is, then you're having supporters giving you feedback, you're having the press giving you feedback, you're having your coach giving you feedback, you're having your peers giving you feedback, and sometimes it's brutal feedback, let's be honest with you, Luke, sort this out, or you're out of the team. You know what I mean? You're out of the team, say you're out of contract to the end of the year, you're out of work, so you're constantly driven, having to perform, having to reflect on your performance and improve consistently. And again, as I said, if you can then direct those skill sets, those character traits into a different vocation, you will be successful, guaranteed.
Yeah. I just feel like it's the when you get your spot in the limelight. I mean, whether it's a post-match interview or a midweek interview or something, I just wish there was a tiny bit more transparency and less of a snowflake society where you could sort of just say, listen, this is what's going on. Instead of, no one really wants to hear, oh yeah, mate, coach has been really good and everything's great and I wish we could, you know, that's footy and we'll move on to next week. I don't really give a shit about that.
I wish you could just speak the truth. I was walking my dog the other day. I checked how long we was on the phone. We was on the phone for an hour and a half on Saturday, was it?
Yeah.
Well, that's $1.99 a minute.
Nothing to phone me back.
Sending me invoice. But we had the exact conversation about, you know, we touched on the Will Dagger comments about Tim Sheens.
Yeah.
And we were, that,
the way I hammered, him for that.
Yeah, you did, mate. But what I'm saying is there's, that they're the sort of interviews that we want. We want his perception of how he feels to Tim Sheens. If it was Willie Mason who'd have given those comments, who'd have worked with him at international level and state of origin level, then we'd have probably been saying something a little bit different.
Yeah, 100%. But, Willie Mason does give them comments out, but he is way more ruthless now than what he was when he was playing. But where do we sort of get a medium here of...
We don't want medium, mate.
I agree. Look, in our marketing strategy could be summed up in, is what I call it, well, I stole it from Roger Ailes, is the orchestra pit theory. So Roger Ailes, a guy head of Fox News, he's since passed away now, and it was a bit of an unsavoury character. In fact, they're making a seat after they just finished the series. I think Russell Crowe's starring him. And he was the guy at the head of Fox News, and he used to say, he said, you could have two guys on stage. Okay, he said, you could have one guy who's got the solution for the Middle East problem, solve it tomorrow like that. You got another guy on stage who falls off stage and he falls into the orchestra pit, smashes everything everywhere. He said, guaranteed that night the news will feature the guy that falls into the orchestra pit. That's what people want to see, the sensationalism. And I think too often in our sport, we shy away from that.
Yeah.
We shy away from that, and I don't think we should.
Yeah, I agree with you though, Fitzian. Do you know what? The word that hits me straight away is honesty. We're not necessarily, I'm not talking about brutal honesty, but a little bit more honesty of how we're feeling in interviews. And I think people see through the transparency of people just saying the same shit, same interview, every single week in the press conference, how did your team go? Yeah, they did all that. We need complete our sets, not give penalties away. We need
it's cliche after cliche.
Yeah, it's shit, yeah, mate. It and to be honest, I think what people want to see is honestly now going back to what Fitzy was saying about you know, visiting the UFC. You look at the UFC now, there's a lot of honesty in the interviews, in the build up to it. If people hate each other, they say that they hate each other. You know, and if they respect each other, they say that. And it's honesty. And honesty in anything in life goes a long way. And I think the transparency shit, people just listen to it and it's water off a duck's back. That's my opinion.
And it's interesting that you sort of touched on other sports. And I think I seen an interview with you recently where you were touching on different sports and how they go about things. And, you know, like with rugby league, we've got a very small, immediate, addressable market. And so many people are focused on pleasing the addressable market rather than reaching out and saying, listen, come watch this. This is different. Yeah. But just for an example, I've spoke to people that have played rugby league and that are passionate rugby league fans. They don't know who LeBron James is. I spoke to someone the other day that didn't know who Michael Jordan was. And they're an avid rugby league supporter. I won't say the club they support, but they don't know who Michael Jordan is. I'm like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You look like a Scottie Pippen fan anyway. It's just... I don't have all the answers for it. I really don't. But
We need to break out of this rugby league bubble, and we break into, first of all, sports media in general. So your Daily Mail, your BBC Sport, your Sky Sports News, and then further afield again is being mainstream.
Yeah.
Do you mean that's a panacea? More times we can appear mainstream is when there are a lot more people engaged in the sport and a lot more money coming into the game.
Yeah. But we need controversy. We need flair. We need these things to get... We don't want to be on the fourth page in the bottom corner. We want that front page.
The most famous person in rugby league at the minute is a mascot at Warrington Wolves called Wolfie. He's been on the news more time than any rugby league player. So what's going on there? Yeah. You guys are doing
it's creating that cut through. Look, you've basically got 4 seconds to grab someone's attention. Do you know what I mean? Otherwise, they're going to scroll straight past you and get the dopamine elsewhere. You've got to stand out and you've got to be different and you've got to be close to the bone. I was speaking to Justin Albrook yesterday. We had a joint press conference with Saints and he absolutely loves what we're doing. Do you know what I mean? People saying, I'm not sure Saints are going to take. Do you know what I mean? Flying a plane over the stadium. Rush loved it. Justin loves it because he understands what we're doing. Attracting a bigger audience, getting people engaged with the sport, more eyeballs on the game, more people watching it, more money coming in, they get paid more money.
There will be people though, if Warrington were to get beat on Friday night, there'll be people though who said, oh, they used it as motivation and
that's the other side of the fence. The positive continues for Saints in that respect because it continues for the following week that they did this, then we did this. Do you know what I mean? And then the next time around, it's another battle, and that's how you develop rivalries.
Generally don't believe you can use that as motivation. It doesn't make you a better player.
You're still playing the game.
Yeah.
When you're on that field, any external factors play a part?
No. Oh, you can't. If I was on the field for this game, and I wouldn't be thinking, oh, I wish they didn't fly that fucking plane. Tom Liner might be thinking that. it's you don't really think that. At the end of the day, when you step on the field, you're pretty focused. It's pretty intense.
But you're right on the controversies. I was reading an article recently. It's the first article I've read on the Women's World Cup. It was about the conduct of the Cameroon team. I don't know if you've heard about it. It was on Sky News. And it's the first article. What's all this about? It got my interest straight away. It's that controversy. Having a look at it. It's the first article.
You were the same with me. I watched England and Cameroon. The Cameroon player spat on the woman's arm, on the England player's arm. It's got me attention. It's not something you want to see in the sport, but all of a sudden now I'm listening or I'm watching or I'm reading about, you know, women's football. And it's not nice, is it? But it does grab people's attention. It might just get someone into that sport.
And Jai, you mentioned earlier about the about American sports. I'm a big fan of American sports. I'm a Houston Rockets fan. I don't know if you saw it the other day, but James Harden didn't win the MVP. Obviously, Giannis of the Bucks won it. And the Rockets have put out a tweet basically calling out Giannis saying it should have been James Harden. That's just, to me, superb. Again, that's got my attention straight away. That's the actual franchise calling out the other place saying James Harden should have won it.
Yeah, and even his MVP speech, I mean, that was, you know, it was emotional. It was like, you know, I just think they can really say what they want, you know. That even when you're watching an NFL game after the post-match, the interviews they're real. Like, the reporters, they'll even talk back to the reporters and say, no, that's a bullshit question. Do you know what I mean? Like, we cannot do that because of fear of being sanctioned by your own club. Absolutely brutalised by fans.
You wouldn't get sanctioned at Warrington Mall, I can guarantee you that.
Would he have been sanctioned?
Nah.
You were clean sheet.
We had a joint press conference.
I swore on live TV once and I didn't get sanctioned.
We had a joint press conference against Wigan early in the season, and we labelled the game bad blood, but the story and narrative was all about the rivalries between the two organisations. Brutal rivalries. What have you played a number of games? You know what I mean? Most games, I mean, descend into some kind of fight or fisticuffs.
I made the highlights on that one.
You did actually, yeah.
Well, you get knocked out in every fight you've had.
Yeah.
He was on the receiving end. And we had a joint press conference. And I would love, Mike Cooper represented ourselves, and it was Tony Club for Wigan. I would love Mike Cooper to have said, do you know what? I'm going to smash Tony Club all over the Halliwell Jones on Friday night.
Yeah.
That would have been like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, loved it.
It would have went everywhere.
It. Yeah.
I guess the one question I do have for you is, we don't need to go too much into, I guess, the analytical side of everything, but on the back of the promotion and stuff and the marketing that Warrington is doing, obviously, it would cost more. But what are the figures as far as crowd and people through the gate?
Yeah.
Have they improved?
Yeah. So our attendance is up on average around about 10%.
So it pays the player, doesn't it?
No, look, I'm not naive enough to think it's purely down to our promotion and marketing. Obviously, the on-field product's got to be right.
Yeah.
It certainly is this year as well, although we're not the best team in the league at present. The league standings reflect that Saints are the leaders. However, it has translated into increased attendances, which is fantastic. And we do a weekly report and look at our social media analytics, and we have like the top five, top three best performers, and consistently it shows it is not necessarily the on-field product, the on-field content that's getting picked up. Yeah. It's the stuff around it. It's Wolfie going into Wigan, Wolfie around Liverpool, it's the wire fly, whatever it may be. It's content. It's not on-field content that's getting the biggest hits, the biggest engagement, and the biggest impressions.
Yeah, well, kids don't watch a full game of rugby league, do they? But they'll watch a Wolf run around, or they'll watch a wire fly, who, by the way, I am going to thrash the wire flyer, and I'm giving him a start off scratch as well. But when he's ready, I don't know who it is. Who is the wire fly? Can you tell us? Well, listen, get me on there. Right, look, we'll end part one there, and we'll be back right after this.
As a parent, it's really important that kids have fun, stay fit, and meet new friends. Please come along to the Rugby M Elite Kids Camps this summer, and your child could have two action-packed days of fun, new friends, and rugby skills. Head over now and book your kids on elitekidscoaching.com.
Welcome back to the Giant Woody Show. Great part one. We'll carry it off part two with, I like what you say about Warrington. It's not just about the on-field product.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was saying to you the other day, if it's all about the on-field product, you're always going to get four or five teams struggling, because there's going to be teams at the bottom of the league who can't sell the product. So taking the product away and giving them a match day experience, and that's what it's got to be all about as a sport.
Yeah, absolutely is. And again, I mentioned it earlier, I'm a big fan of American sports. I think they get it absolutely bang on. I know this is a bit cliche, but look, we don't sell tickets, we sell experiences. Mm. And we can't control what happens between whistle to whistle. That's the players and the coach's job. Mm. But we can control what happens in and around that. So when people come to Warrington Wolves game, I want them walking away thinking, wow, what an experience. And have a talking point, not necessarily what happened on the field. And
again, or if you've lost the game, it's not just straight on the internet going, use a shit. It's, you know, how good was the day, or we had a really great day.
It's not been great. Or I saw the wire flyer, and like I said, we're speaking about cut through. So the wire flyer raced against Marwan Kukash when we played Salford.
Oh, what a pathetic effort Kukash put up, eh?
He actually injured his knee.
He's got 50 racehorses and he just comes up with that shit.
Sky, not even Sky Sport, it was Sky News picked it up, and it went on their timeline. What, 5-6 million followers? So again, it's having that cut through, and it's being different, and it has yielded a lot of success for us today.
Mm. Woody.
Wire flyer. That's it.
Yeah, so...
what I will touch on is... I left Warrington in, 2015? I've gone back there now just to help with a bit of the, hosting the lounges and the boxes and stuff.
Oh, yeah?
And, yeah.
Well, there must be some empty seats.
Warrington legend. But what I will say is, and what I've commented on is, when I've gone back, it is a completely different atmosphere during a match day experience. I was obviously involved in, if I was injured, because I was always picked... I was just always injured if I were
playing. Yeah, there's a shortage of back rows.
But
and front
I'd be in the boxes, I'd be in the lounges and everything. And it's complete. It's got a different dynamic now. The whole match day experience has completely changed. Even to the point where you've decorated the stadium. It looks the part. It looks fancy. You've got pictures of the players all over the wall. Ex-players. I've not made it. 20 years at a club. And you don't
really?
Make the wall, mate. It's
you're in the bathrooms.
You
should get you about the cubicle in the bathroom.
Me and Mark Foster spent 20 years at Warrington Wolves. And we both stand there and say, why is Joe Monaghan on there when he spent 3 years here? You know what I mean?
Because he scored 5 tries in
Challenge
Cup match,
it's not
mate.
About me. It's about that match day experience.
Our competitors is not just other sports club. Do you know what I mean? We're in the leisure industry, entertainment industry. We're up against bowling, Gulliver's World, whatever it may be. So we've got to provide an experience over and above just a rugby league game.
Mm. Mm.
I think that's really important.
John Monaghan is actually the godfather of my son. Some people would think that is the dumbest decision ever. It's debatable. What did you think?
Great guy.
Monaghan,
great guy. Unbelievable strike rate.
Yeah.
Unbelievable strike rate. Do you know what I mean? A big human being, but such a character. Do you mean fantastic for the group? He's a big human being as well. He's
role
playing on the wing and those hands like shovels.
Talking of characters though, because. And we're talking about marketing. Is that something you would look at in terms of signing future players? So obviously the on-field product is 100% the 100%. Main thing, but they've got to be marketable as players.
It doesn't fit some players. It doesn't, and some players aren't comfortable with it. Primaries, can they play rugby league? That's obviously number one. But if they can bring value in terms of marketing as well, if they're on a par with somebody else in terms of ability, but they bring a little bit more to the table in terms of marketing, we're going with the marketing guy every time, every day of the week.
You couldn't have 20 John Monaghans, could you?
Oh no, you couldn't have 20 John Monaghans.
Not unless you hide the peanut butter. But that's another story. I'm gonna send that.
Woof woof.
No. Right. Do you want to touch on some talking points?
Yeah, we can do, mate.
Go on then. What do you got for us?
I think one of the stories I read this week was that Callum Watkins signed for the Gold Coast Titans, but actually not wanted by Gareth Brennan. That was one of the rumours. What do you think about this,
mate? I just think that's a massive stuff up. I don't know where Leeds are at. I can't really comment because I don't know internally what's going on there.
I must clarify, it is only a rumour, something that I've read. But
yeah, disclaimer.
Don't
sue us. Yeah. Who gives a shit? What's that with one of these companies?
But would Warrington, would you have a look at that, Fitzy? Would you say, as the CEO and Simon Moran as the owner and the director, sign someone if you felt they was going to benefit that team and Steve Price said, you know what, I don't want that player?
Yeah, look. It's an interesting point, this, because coaches come and go, as do CEOs. But say, for example, I'm not sure what Gareth's got left on his contract. I think he's got another 12 months after this, hasn't it? Although there's been speculation that someone else is coming in. But say he was out of contract at the end of this year. Do you know what I mean? So if he's bringing a player in, say for next year or for this year, he's going to sign a 2-year contract. He may not be there next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a funny situation. That's why in Australia there's a lot of recruitment managers similar to director of rugby's, that they will recruit players. But I think it's important that the coach absolutely has input.
How much control does a CEO have over signing a player, and does he take preference at all?
Yeah, I think it depends on the CEO, Jai, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah.
If it's a CEO that has... has got a performance background. I think they will have input like myself.
Yeah.
So myself, Steve, Simon, the chairman, is our like basically recruitment committee. We'll sit down and discuss players, and then we'll go in a certain direction.
Are you able? You don't have to answer, but are you able to override a coach in his position and say, look, if you're just sort of debating, and the coach says, no, I'm not really sure on him. Are you able to say, look, I am sure?
I think it depends on the case, Jai, if I'm being honest with you. It depends on his reasons why not.
Yeah.
But if we think that it's going to benefit the club long term, well, possibly.
Because
the coaches, depending on the length of the coach's contract, the coach can be very short term. And it does need results, you know what I mean? But sometimes you need to take a step back and say, right, we need to think 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the track here when you're out of contract. So we're going to make signings that's going to future proof the club going forward, not necessarily, may not be under your tenure. That's something to deal with. But we've got a great relationship. And as I mentioned, we've got a recruitment committee there. Which we all buy into, and obviously Steve's got his finger on the pulse with players both over in the NRL.
Mm. Are you allowed to say what some of your recruitment strategies are? Would you be able to give us a little bit of an insight? So some of the boxes that you are looking for at play, because as spectators or fans of the game, a lot of people will just think you look at the on-field product. So some of the things, you know, you might look at the personality, get references from other clubs, that type of thing.
Yeah, I think that's the first one, Paul, to be honest with you, is what they're like as a human being. Do you know what I mean? If they're going to come into your organisation, they could be the best player in the world, but if they're toxic and they're not going to get on with people and going to rub people up the wrong way, well, we're not going to entertain them. The damage they could do to the brand is not worth what they could deliver on the field. And it tends to end in tears anyway. Do you know what I mean? History has shown that when players have had issues and they've gone to different clubs, that it can end in tears. Not always, but it can. But it depends on the position, depends on the salary cap you've got available. There's a lot of things that go into the pot.
Is it difficult to, when they are on each end of the spectrum, I guess, where they might be a toxic individual, or they might be someone that doesn't fit the mold of the club, but their on field is first class. Is it hard then to say, oh, look, yeah, we'll take them, or would you rather lean the other way?
Again, it probably depends. if it's a player you're bringing in and you're in bad vibes about him, you probably wouldn't touch him, regardless of how good it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think your value, your opinion is valued a little bit more because you're an ex-player as well?
Yeah, I think as I mentioned, I think because I'm from the performance background and got a bit of an understanding of the game, and I'm probably a bit of a rugby geek. I watch that many games. It's untrue. So probably the fact that I've got that background certainly helps.
I think more players need to move into roles within the game, and especially behind the scenes, and then even into CEO roles, because first and foremost, you know the game better than anyone, really, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be nice if more players from rugby league stayed in rugby league in some capacity, but then there's got to be a want to stay in that industry, or there's got to be a want to do the actual job. We can't just create roles for players because they've played rugby league, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Curl's obviously not a CEO because he played rugby league. He's a CEO because he has a passion for the job.
Yeah.
Still loves rugby league. He's gone away in his own time and studied. You know, you've done a business master's, which you've not even told us about.
Yeah.
You know, but you've done, he's
done
an
MBA.
He's done a sports science degree and a master's business degree, all in order to get his foot in the door and to work his way up the ladder. Now, there's certain players we would just expect to fall into that job because I'm an ex-player and I've played for so long. You know, there's a lot of graft away from before you actually get to where you're at.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably when I got appointed into the position, and I'm not scared of mentioning this, probably a lot of the supporters were like, that's a bit of an odd appointment. Where's that come from? Do you know what I mean? Without understanding where I'd come from. But as soon as I went into the player welfare role and understood I wanted a career in the sports administration aspect of the game, do you know what I mean? I had ambitions to be a CEO, and as you say, I did an MBA, and which I was fortunate to get a distinction in, and went and visited, a number of sports organisations, and continually investing in yourself, and that's really important.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you, to use your word, you come from a working class background, you know, in Wigan, like myself, and we've all, you know, been 15, 16 year olds, played rugby with some lads, and they'd say, who's Fitzy got that job? And you know, and it's like, well, you know, when he was like 15, 16, he's a completely different person now. He's gone away, he's studied, he's worked his balls off to get where he is. And I think it's important that, you know, when we do podcasts like this, or you're on Rugby AM, that people do get to hear how hard you've actually worked, because it doesn't just come and fall into your lap. Like anything, you know, for you to be a professional rugby player, it doesn't just come to you. You've grafted, you've made a lot of sacrifices, and it's that thing about what the fans don't see away from the product.
Yeah, and it's good to get that across to them as well. I mean, I've told you about that story, haven't I, where I sort of just threw caution to the wind and left Australia, turned down a full-time contract because it wasn't big enough. And I'm not scared to tell people. I came and signed for Featherstone Rovers on £10,000 for the year, right? And that's how I had to live. But I knew that I would play Super League. That was the goal. But I still had to live that year. I turned down. I don't care about talking monetary values and stuff. $100,000 in Australia to £10,000 in England. To chase a dream, do you know what I mean? Or to continue a dream, because I didn't believe in what was happening or how I was treated in Australia.
£10,000 a year and you got to play with me.
I know.
So, you know what I mean? That is a deal breaker.
And you actually
owe me 200 quid from that time you took my money vase, bastard.
Moving on then, next bit of news that we've seen is more NRL. News really, but rumours about Thompson from Saints going over to
Paul McShane to Newcastle Knights as well. That is a strong rumour circulating.
Newcastle Thunder, I think it was Championship. No.
How do you think he'd go?
No, mate, I think Paul McShane would do all right in the NRL. I think he's got a good rugby brain and he's.
Yeah, I mean, I thought John Bateman would get a few games here and there. He's turned that on his head, hasn't he?
Bateman's killing it. Yeah. I think we all knew realistically. Probably not as quick as he is doing, because he's made a sudden impact. But I was thinking he'll probably play, you know, a handful of games in his first season. Then he'll come out to, you know, to be a regular starter. But, you know, the thing with Paul McShane is covered a lot of his games in the amateur game last year in the NCL. Very, very smart player.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why I think he'd do well over there. And, mate, he can tackle, he can bang, he can pass, he can kick. So
I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for what he does. Having played with him for a few years, I would love to see him, say, in an NRL environment or in an England jersey to... He's obviously an 80-minute hooker, but I'd love to see the power sort of harnessed over a, say, back end of the 20 of a half.
Yeah.
For in an England jersey or in the NRL as a come off the bench nine.
For me though, he's not a James Robey, he's not a Darrell Clark. He's more like he probably is more
mate,
like
he's a terrier.
Camden
he is honestly a terrier.
A Camden Smith type of hooker where, you know, he gives a great distribution. He reads the game. For me, it's probably like having a halfback at hooker. He's so smart and he looks up, he can see. He creates a lot of opportunities for the team
but
against the opposition.
But it's a worrying trend, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Now Super League talent is going over to the NRL. We don't be seen as a feeder division for the NRL. Now you mentioned John Bateman there, but probably worth a mention is Sutton.
Yeah.
I mean, he's since he's gone over there, he's gone over under the radar a little bit when he went over there. Do you know what I mean? The Aussie press didn't know much about him, but he's been great for Canberra.
Yeah, and I'll throw my hand up. I did not think that he would play. I didn't think he'd make it. So
I think it's a compliment for the game over here. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We've got talent. Do you know what I mean within the game that's not necessarily getting international recognition, but it's also a concern because that's all it's going to do is alert the NRL recruitment managers. Do you mean to come over here and start fishing in this pond?
Do you know what though? I don't think there's ever since I've been watching rugby league anyway. As a young kid, I don't think there's ever been a question mark over English forwards versus Aussie forwards. I think the question mark comes when we start questioning the halfbacks, the hooking role, the fullback,
the wings, and the centres. Odgson's gone well, to be fair. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Odgson.
As hooker, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is the forwards in general, your back rowers, your front rowers, there's never been a question because I think the English forwards who do well over here, your tough, gritty forwards, it suits their style of play in the NRL. You know, your James Gray, your Adrian Morley, your Sam Burgesses, both the Burgess brothers. I just think the style of play English forwards like to play, it suits the NRL, but I think it's a bit more questionable in the NRL whether our halfbacks are smart enough really. I'd probably say I think we touched on this again a few weeks ago, but I think a lot of it comes from how we're coached at a young age.
Oh mate, there's no denying that junior development in England is miles behind the junior development in Australia, but coming from Australia, the aura of an English player in Australia is that the forwards are tough bastards. That is the feeling that Aussies have. That's the feeling that Aussie fans have. That if they're an English forward, you've got a bit about you.
Yeah, I completely agree.
The thing is it the coincidence that who was the last outside back to really kill it in the NRL?
Ray Kerner.
Yeah, and he only did one
season. He got the Dalian Winger of the Year, didn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, there's not. Obviously, you've got Ellery Henry and stuff, but we're going way back there.
Like, Andy Courier.
But again, Brian Kerner, you look at Brian Kerner. If Brian was sat here now, he'd probably tell you he wasn't the most skillful player. Yeah. But what he did have, he had a lot of grit. He had a lot of determination. He was solid. He'd put the body on the line.
He had a good centre inside him.
that helps, yeah.
I love that.
But we all know that in Australia, they love it when you put your body on the line. They love it when you're tough.
Yeah.
You know, and that's...
It was a handful, wasn't it? It was a handful.
Oh, mate, it was an handful.
I remember that try he scored at Headingley when he was at Wigan. He took a dummy half scoot and went the full length. Yeah.
I mean, when he came to Warrington, I think he played about five games. He broke his thumb at Headingley, and you know, and he still didn't want to come off. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's a tough, solid competitor. Mm. I think he has a lot of the values that you speak about. You know, he's just got that work ethic, and you know, he's got that resilience, hasn't he? He had a lot of setbacks himself during his career.
He's a great player, Brian. Again, as he's mentioned earlier, he does talk himself down a bit. I remember at one point, I think he was vice captain for Great Britain as well, you know.
He's quality. I remember him playing for Knights when I was growing up. I used to love him.
It's a shame, really, that we do sometimes forget how good. I love talking about ex-players, you know, we were great in the game, because I think it saddens me sometimes when we soon forget how good these players were, you know, like your Paul Scunthorpes, your Andy Farrells, you know, your Brian Kearney, such an array of names what are just not heard now.
Rugby AM had Ellery Henry in the studio, and I was like literally mesmerised, because I was behind one of the cameras, and it was just like, it was mesmerising listening to him speak about how passionate he was, and just his mental drive that has not only got him the career that he had, but it stayed with him.
But again, you know, we said this about Martin Afaya, Sean Edwards and Ellery Hanley are probably still the three most famous names in rugby league, because they're nationwide names, aren't they? Yeah. You know, they've been on TV. Now, they've not played the game for over 25 years. You know, so
yeah, but what is it? What is it? It's the nicknames. It's the flair. That's the thing. And who is this is the question I have. And maybe you guys can answer it. Who is the Michael Jordan of the Super League? Who is the LeBron James of the Super League? We don't have one. Do you know what I mean? The NRL's got these. The NRL's got the Greg Inglis. The NRL's got the Andrew Johns. Do you know what I mean?
In my opinion, I think the players are there. It's just we're not put them on the platform to allow them to get to that status or put the spotlight on that much. Yeah. Like, you see there's some stuff Blake Austin does. It's incredible. Do you know what I mean? Some of the tries he scored, it's sensational. Tommy Makinson, the try scored at the weekend. I mean, unbelievable. So the players are there. It's just we need to put them on a bigger platform to expose them to a bigger audience so they are more recognised.
Just let them off the leash.
Greg Inglis used to have the celebration, though, didn't he? You know, when he scored.
Oh, mate, everyone. Wendell Saylor used to come up with some crackers. Some got him into trouble, some didn't. But look, you know, Fletch throwing the hand grenade in Origin. I mean, that was, you know, it was awesome, man. I think we need to bring it back more. But look,
I will say that I think if a player, and it has to be a top player, if he had the confidence to put himself out there, to call players out, to do celebrations, I think it would be a very, very smart commercial decision for that individual. I think they'll make a lot of money if they were prepared to do it. Someone like a Conor McGregor of Super League.
I'm going to call Anthony Gelling out this week.
Anthony Gelling would be great for it.
I'm going to call him out on Twitter.
But do you know what? It all starts somewhere, and what will happen is, and to go back to you know what Damien usually said, first of all, people will oppose it, won't they? They'll be against it, and then they'll start coming towards the idea of something changing, and then all of a sudden everyone will start doing it.
Yeah.
So it sort of comes with a bit of a chain reaction, doesn't it?
Right, look, at the beginning of the season we had a change in mascot. We changed Wolford, you mean, for a couple of different reasons.
What, the bloke in the suit or the actual Wolf itself?
Yeah, the bloke in the suit, and do you mean the supporters wanted me putting my head on a stick? Do you mean, fast forward 6-7 months, now he's the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you're right, you've got some time, got through a little bit of pain, but see a bigger picture at the end of it.
It's who's just got the biggest balls to actually make that change and said, you know what, we need to start celebrating. Once you get
or
two,
just
three
two,
players,
or just two's got two balls.
I think the coaches have a play to, the coaches have a big part to play in this as well. I think at some clubs they're given too much say on in terms of the promos and medias and access to the players. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where I think sometimes they don't see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Well, we're fortunate Steve absolutely gets it. You know what I mean? Where to the point where he's doing a power slam on Wolfer. Yeah. You know what I mean? He gets it. Yeah. Justin Holbrook gets it, understands it, because they see the bigger picture. Because yeah. I mentioned earlier, more people watching the game, more people engaged in it, more money comes in, they get paid more money.
But what I'll say as well, Curl, is a lot of the coaches don't have the luxury of having, you know, likes of yourself educating the coaches to why you're doing it. What is the why are we doing this? A lot of coaches will just see it as like dicking around on social media and stuff. I don't actually think they know the value of it or the importance of, you know, a lot of coaches don't use social media, so straight away, as you mentioned social media, they'll talk it down and they think it's a load of bullshit, you know. So I think it's vital that we educate the people who are in them positions to say, listen, this is why we're doing it. This is why we want you to power slam.
We are a media entity. You think about it, okay? So the biggest stakeholder in the game is Sky. Fantastic partner. Very fortunate to have them in the game. They contribute $40 million to the game a year. Therefore, by definition, we are a media entity. So the content we put out, how we behave, needs to be akin to a media entity. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? If the media wasn't interested in us, then that's when it's time to be concerned. Do you know what I mean? That's my belief.
Simon Curl, you said there's no such thing as bad press, you know, so...
Well, I can give you some bad press. That's part two, baby. We'll be back with part three.
Have you got a future superstar at your amateur club? Get your videos in now to the Bachelor's Mushy Peas Amateur Try of the Week. Just upload your videos to the Rugby AM Facebook page. Each week, the winning try gets a Bachelor's Mushy Pea official ball, and they go into the competition for Try of the Season, where one lucky team will win the chance to train with a Super League team of their choice. Outstanding prize for outstanding talent, thanks to Bachelor's Mushy Peas.
Welcome back to part three to the Giant Woody Show.
That's
doing it again.
No, there's only one take. Continue.
Right.
It was all right.
We're in the entertainment business here. Yeah.
Hey, great capturing, by the way. I've not mentioned that.
Hey, yeah, look at this.
Brief buffer,
give us a quick rundown. What's it all about?
Yeah. So we've just done a deal with a new headwear provider, which is New Era. New Era, one of the biggest brands.
You're going straight to the top.
In the world. Yeah, straight to the top. So to be aligned with some sporting organisations like the LA Lakers, New York Yankees, Man United is incredible. And again, due to our branding, our marketing, our projecting ourselves, how we've positioned ourselves, you know what I mean, it's getting interest from some real blue chip companies.
I'm liking where you're going with it. And I will tell you a little quick story about when the time I was at Featherstone Rovers, which is obviously very far from my heart. We got these jumpers one time, right, from Fev Rovers, and there was a big Fev Rovers badge in the middle, and my stitching was peeling off a little bit. So I thought, ripped it off. There was a Wakefield Wildcats badge underneath it. So, look, you want marketing? Take it from the best.
Talking about social media and everything, though, like, the, you know, I've worked on the coaches before where they don't have social media, and they sort of ban the players from putting certain content on there. How do you guys approach that? Because it can get players into deep trouble if their own content is out there. But do you openly, you know, say to the players, look, really publicise what you've done? Do you tell them what to tweet? Because when I go on social media sometimes... the same things coming
copy
off
and
by
paste,
all the players.
So
is there a WhatsApp group that you say, can you just thank such a body for making his 100th appearance today? And is that given out, or is that the lads just doing it?
Some of it is organic. Do you know what I mean? Some of them do off their own back, but yeah, there'll be some stuff. Time to say, look, can you just actually push this message for us? Because some of the players' reach is pretty impressive. Look at Josh Fernley's following, for example. If we ask him to put something out there, that's hitting a bigger audience. So some stuff we will ask him to do it, but a lot of it's organic and they will do it off the own back as well.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's getting a lot of excitement, though, it is with me, because I'm batting for London this year. I want them to stay up big time.
I do. London aren't going down.
But I don't think so. But the relegation battle is getting very, very interesting. I think it's been a real bonus this season for Rugby League and the promotion, who's going to come up. Obviously, a lot of people saying Toronto, but Lee Centurions are bringing a lot of players in and spending some money. Could they possibly get that promotion spot?
Featherstone Rovers are looking good as well. And don't forget the mighty Bradford Bulls.
Bradford have gone now, mate.
We've got a few back, mate.
You're back. Exactly, yeah. They've gone
2-0. I'm adding 8 points a week, average. If I kick goals, I could bump that up. Yeah. But no, look, the bottom of the Super League ladder is more exciting. And I think, is it Warrington? Who's Warrington playing this week?
Saints.
And they don't have the TV game, do they?
We just spoke about it for last day.
Have we?
We've just been speaking about the build-up.
Yeah. Did we just speak about who's got the Sky game?
Yeah, Warrington and Saints.
No,
we've just been speaking about it.
Yeah, we've got the Sky game. It's the Wigan Saints game, isn't it?
They've been marketing it all week, flying planes over Saints.
Fuck, let's start part two again.
America's not that fucking good after all, is it?
What is that, a stroke or something?
No, it's not what you're thinking of. You're thinking of Wigan Saints, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm thinking of...
Yeah, Wigan Saints in a few weeks. That's not true.
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm not losing my mind.
He's been on DMT again.
So they've got the Sky game as... They've been shafted, really,
haven't
they?
Are you back with us now?
Yeah, sorry, boys. I'm back. Okay. Someone take over for a second. I need to gather myself.
But let's go back to what was originally talking about. The promotion, Lee Centurion spending a bit of money now in terms of, are they going to fight for that promotion?
Yeah, look, and it comes down to one game, doesn't it? You know, we saw London do it last year when they beat Toronto in a one-off game, and it's great to see Derek Beaumont still in the game, in my opinion. I think we need those type of guys in the game, do you know what I mean? And I tip my hat to all the owners out there who've put in a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? Derek has put a lot of money into Lee over time, so it'd be great to see him back in Super League.
You do. Having worked with Derek, you really want characters like Derek in your game, and you know, he has pumped a lot of money into Lee Centurions, and again, behind the scenes, what he does for the Lee Centurions club.
I don't think they get the recognition they deserve, Paul, to be honest with you. A number of owners, you know what I mean? You can look at Simon and Stuart Middleton, the chairman at our place, who pumped in a lot of cash. Then you've got Ken Dave at Huddersfield, Ian at Wigan, Eamon at Saints, and like Derek at Lee. These guys have put in, the hard-earned money. We're talking millions here pumped into the game. And it is really disappointing at times when you see fans giving them a hard time. And
yeah, don't take a genius to...
But the fans just think they pump the money in, don't they? And when you see them, what they actually do away from the club, of trying to attract players, having meetings, and they have a lot of stuff. It's not just about getting the checkbook out and saying, let me sign that, you go away and do that. They have a lot to do. So, if Derek can get them back into Super League, I think it'll be a great... Look where they were 12 months ago. Yeah. Look to where Derek's got them now. So, if they could come up into Super League, that would be a Rocky Balboa story.
I just think that with the current structure, it's obviously, as you said... You're in that top five. It's one game. Toronto is beatable. I mean, Fev almost beat him. They scored two late tries and just got him. Toulouse have already beat him. There's even the bottom of the league is scoring 16 points against Toronto.
Who would you prefer to come up though? Would you prefer Toronto?
I like expansion. I mean, what David Argyle's doing there, besides his most recent antics. Is very good. He has pumped a lot of cash into the sport, and he does a lot to give more exposure to the championship. I think hasn't he paid for the every team to be broadcast as one game, which obviously is promotion for Toronto, but it also is promotion for every other team. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single championship team gets their spot in the limelight on Sky Sports, and that's massive. And I mean, just since our league's come in, there's a whole nother range of exposure for all across the board championship teams, and I think it needs more. It's a much tighter competition from when I first got over here, 2015 I got over here. There was the four teams, there was Lee and a few others, and that was it. Now you've got potentially eight teams that can still make the five, and we've only got nine games to go. It's an exciting competition, and it's an exciting piece of structure. Just after you've got the relegation, you've obviously got the promotion, and then you've got the Super League Grand
Final. I think your team, Bradford. You look at Bradford. I think Super League needs a strong Bradford. I'm being honest with you. I mean, they're still pulling relatively decent crowds where we currently are.
Well, we got the crowd of the round for the Challenge Cup. Yeah. It was us and Halifax.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Saints playing in that. And we beat that by a fair way.
Who would you like to see come up first?
Yeah, good
question. Would you sooner like the Heartlands of rugby league, like your Bradford or your Lee, to come up, or would you like to see the expansion and say, you know what, I'd love Toronto come up?
Yeah, but
Depends what way you look at it, really, yeah, isn't it? Because for the game, Bradford to come up would be awesome.
Look, it wasn't too long ago that Bradford were getting 15,000 plus crowds, you know what I mean, against Leeds, you know what I mean? So that supporter base is there. They don't have to start from scratch like a Toronto is. The thing with Toronto is, and I understand the potential value that could bring to Super League, but I think there's probably a lot of issues that need to be ironed out, you know what I mean? The scheduling, they've had the issues financially in terms of visas, etc. I think there's a couple of issues there that need ironed out. And will they ultimately bring value to the Super League competition and to the broadcast deal? Because there's going to be a point where there'll be too many non-British clubs in Super League, and that may not be positive from the broadcaster. So we need to understand where the broadcaster sits and this as well. But yeah, I'd love to see Bradford back in. I'd love to see a strong Lee back in. Even Widnes, obviously, what's happened to them is not great.
It would be interesting if Toronto did come up, and then you've obviously got I don't know how far away that Ottawa thing is, but New York obviously entering the competition in 21, is it? Is New York coming in 2021?
They've got a lot of work to do before then, in my opinion.
Well, you'd assume if they were to come in, they wouldn't be coming short of change. I mean, you got to think future-wise, what would the Super League look like if it was Toronto, New York, France? You know, you've got a lot of travelling there, and would that bring the lower half of the clubs? I don't know how much does it cost clubs to travel, or is that covered in some of the deals? As far as, like, say, when you go to Catalans, does Warrington pay the... How much of that does Warrington have to pay?
There will be funds from centrally from that, but we've got to go twice this year. So there'll be contribution from Super League that covers a certain amount of cost, but we'll have to, for the amount of staff we take and players, will be over and above cost on top of that. I'm not too sure what's going to happen with Toronto. We probably would expect them to fund all travel.
Yeah, you've got to look at it. If Toronto are in there, if New York eventually got there and Catalan stay there, you know, four teams that aren't spending the cap, who are already under the pump as far as player poaching and players that they're able to afford, it becomes a bit of an excess cost.
So where do you think we build the game? Do you think that we make our game stronger in the United Kingdom before we start looking at expanding it in Toronto and everything else? Do we try and make it stronger in your likes of your rugby league Heartlands, like your Leeds, your Bradford, your Widnesses, or do we say, well, no, you either get on this crest of a wave?
Yeah, I don't think they're mutually exclusive, to be honest with you, Paul. I think, yes, we want to grow and the Heartlands, that's really important, and there's a lot to go at that. Mm. But I think, yes, we should have a look at these markets. Not saying that we go into those markets, but I think it's really important to analyse it and be real strategic. I think at times we've probably been a bit guilty of being ad hoc, rushing into a decision and fast-tracking teams in. We've got to be really considered and think of the long-term strategic aims and goals of Super League, and will they bring value, and what does that look like?
Mm. So do you think it will bring value then, Toronto being in Super League?
I'm not sure at the minute.
I'd like to see expansion. I would like to see expansion if it's done properly.
Correct.
If it's not going to affect other sides greatly when we talk about money and stuff like that, and it's obviously your away support and your crowds, that's a given. That's going to go down. It just will. If a team like Bradford comes in, it's going to go up. So from one perspective, if you're looking at a monetary system based on Super League and funding, a Bradford would be good. Mm. A Lee would be good. A Toronto would be poor for that. But if we're going to look at expanding the game, it's something that the NRL cannot do. We can do New Zealand, that's fine, but we can't do anywhere else. You know, Australia cannot do it. We could grow the game and expand the game, and if done correctly, it would be something pretty
special.
Key word
though, you're saying, guys, if done correctly. Yeah. You know what I mean? You hear some stuff with Toronto, with visa issues, and I'm just not sure yet.
Darcy Lussick, is he
played at the weekend.
Oh, did he? So he's back.
Did he play at the weekend?
No, I think he's still in Australia, isn't he? I think he's still in Australia. So he left and he couldn't get back in. But even we had some players that couldn't go because they've got like a unpaid parking ticket or something. So that's just ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's.
Wakefield would only be able to send five players.
Yeah. we had it with a couple of players at Lee where there was visa issues, and it was only GBH as well. Mm. So,
Just B&E for a break and enter.
Sorry, it was only actual bodily harm. It wasn't even grievous.
Oh, so actual.
I thought they should have got in.
Nothing wrong with a bit of actual. No. Hey, all right, let's just touch briefly. Look, the women's state of origin in Australia kicked off on the weekend. They separated it from the actual state of origin. Mm. Why they didn't play it before it, I don't know. But they did it standalone at Sydney Oval, just the one game. A crowd of over 10,000 people came. Mm. I mean... Does this come down to how do we get more? Is ticket pricing a massive how do you put it,
barrier?
Yeah, I mean, a reserve grade game in Australia, whether it's New South Wales Cup or Queensland Cup. New South Wales Cup, when I was playing at West Tigers, I think it was a fiver, so it's costing you about £3 to get into a reserve grade game. $25, you can get a $50 family ticket. So you, your partner, your two kids, $50. So you're looking at about, what, 32 quid.
I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier, Jai, about in terms of your offering that you provide as a Super League club. If you're paying, you mean, £20 to watch a game, there's not much else around it. Yeah, it's... You may be reluctant paying that £20. But if you're going there and having a cool experience with your family in a safe environment, well, no problem at all paying that money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can go and watch some teams in the Championship and basically just get a game of rugby, pay a fiver for a pie and a pint, and, you know, you can't justify a 20 quid ticket price.
Yeah.
Like I say, if you've got that atmosphere and there's things going on around, and it's dreadful, some of the match day entertainment, that they feel that they can justify some of the match day entertainment by, you know, the 20 quid. It's just, you know, getting... some cheerleaders dancing on a pitch is not classed as entertainment in my eyes, and just doesn't justify.
Yeah, and they are cheerleaders, but they're kids. They're just kids. Look, Bradford had a pretty good initiative on the weekend for the Armed Forces round, where it was a tenner a person for the first 10,000, and we got a relatively similar crowd to what we normally get when the tickets are 21 and 22 quid, which is it's really bizarre for me. So because Bradford's been under a lot of fire
How many people knew that offer was actually on?
Well, you know what I mean? they did do a fair bit of marketing, but obviously it was just from the one Twitter account. But they could have put it in the group, every player has to tweet it, and every player would tweet it, but no one did because no one asked. I did, because, you know, I care about the game.
We've run a couple of ticket initiatives this year against London and Catalan, obviously due to low away support. We've done a ticket initiative that to go into the West Stand. And the key thing for us is getting the data. That's really important. And that's like data is, it's a bit cliche, like the new oil. So when we get the new data that comes in, we can then target market those individuals to engage them with the club, to hopefully come back and then pay full price later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd walk into a school and give 500 tickets to kids, right? And let's say the kids go home and half of them throw the ticket in the bin and don't give a shit about it because they like football. That's fine. But if the other 250 debate to their parents, hey, look, I might want to go to this, I've got a free ticket, but the parents come and they pay. All it takes is one of them to fall in love with the game.
But it's important, Jai, when you do this ticket initiative, that when they do come to the game, to the venue, it's a real cool experience.
Yeah.
We've got a customer journey model at the club, and every touch point, it's got to be excellent. They've got a real, real high level of customer service, regardless if it's a family, a kid, or a guy on their own. It's providing that real quality experience. Mm. And that's what's really important.
I mean, I always remember giving my cousin a couple of tickets to watch us versus Leeds in a playoff game at Edenley, and it was a nail biter of a game. We ended up winning in the end, and he were buzzing. So yeah. Fortunately, he come to a game where we won. It was exciting, and then he become a rugby league fan. But that's not always going to happen when you give tickets away. So, like you say, you've got to make the match day experience special. But I think the key thing is, where you're saying give tickets away, it's that follow up into it. It's then targeting those people and
with a bespoke message. I mean, it's not a blanket message that goes to everyone, because everyone have different likes.
Yeah, there's also the splashback of loyal paying fans that say, why am I paying?
Yeah. And it's funny, because we have a fans consultation group and we meet every 4 to 6 weeks to discuss different topics, and this got raised, and I thought, because we're going to launch these couple of ticket initiatives, which was reducing the prices of for the going the way stand, and we thought, look, let's have a chat with these, what will the reaction be? And I was quite surprised. No, said if you think it's going to boost attendances, add to the atmosphere, particularly in terms of kids, absolutely do it. to be honest. I was quite surprised that actually, because I thought initially that would be a bit of kickback, but their feedback said no. Do you mean want a better atmosphere, want a bigger supporter base, crack on?
I think if they love the club, you know, they want that bigger fan base. I think, you know, you're never going to please everybody, are you? But I think I would say the majority of fans that love Warrington Wolves or their club.
But in terms of as cost being a barrier to come to Super League games, I mean, we've done a kids' season ticket, a kids' membership, £49. Access to all home games and away games.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, cheaper than a console game. It's pretty incredible, actually.
I always remember actually when you asked me to, would I come down on match days and do the box or the lounge with Mark Foster, and I said, yeah, I'll come because I'm at the games anyway. My lad wants to come to every game, and he said, oh, that's great. He said, we do a season ticket for £49 now. Expecting my lad to pay for a season ticket. Surely you can come with me for nothing.
You got him a credit card?
Typical CEO, isn't it? You know, trying to get your last penny out of you.
Yeah, not your fiver off a replica shirt, though, did
No,
not GPS in the back, so you can't sell it online. No, look, I really think the kids is where it's at. I mean, you always remember your childhood hero, don't you? Like, I mean, my kid's only really young right now, but like he loves the Elmo, he loves Spider-Man, and these things stick with you. If you can go to a rugby league game and you can fall in love with that figure,
you're 100% right. I can remember when we played for Wigan Schoolboys and got my first comp ticket. I remember exactly what it looked like.
Yeah,
it sports with cherry and white, but it was like pink.
Feel and
pink. Do you remember that pink with a fixture stamped on it? It's like the same with the shirt. The first Wigan shirt was sponsored by the JJB, and I can remember pulling out my drawer, the texture, what it felt like, what it smelled like. I'd lied his number on the back.
Nostalgia, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like I can remember it. Was it 97 Newcastle Knights? Was Newcastle Knights was my team growing up. When they won the grand final, I remember that inside ball to Darren Albert. I was there, mate. I used to bang the VHS in and stick it.
Joy went short side.
Put it back, and he just hit it back inside. And mate, I was telling kids at school, I said, oh, I've watched it back. I said, Darren Albert jumped 15 feet in the air. Like, I was trying to do it. I was trying to do his jump in the backyard. And I fell in love with the Newcastle Knights. And I still remember to this day when this guy got, this bloke, one of my grandma's friends, he got this hat signed, one of my hats. He got it, the brim signed by Andrew Johns. And I just remember grabbing it and thinking, this is a piece of gold. Like, I'd sell everything I own and just to keep this. And I put it away in this box, and I remember pulling it out like 10 years later and just thinking, whew, put it back on. And you know what I mean? I was a young kid, and that captivated me. But it also inspired me to play rugby. And I wanted to be like him, you know? You know the saying, I want to be like Mike. You know, how do we get that into kids? It's where it's at. That's where the market is.
Wigan Rugby had that in the day. Like, I've said it before, Wigan Rugby League in the late 80s and 90s, when I started watching Wigan, they were like Hollywood stars in Wigan. And they were seen on BBC Sports TV, up for Team of the Year on BBC Sports Personality. There were players up for the award, so they were like Hollywood stars. That inspired me, you know, and I'll always remember those tickets what you used to get from school. instead of being white and red, they were pink with a stamp on, and I always remember being sat on in Central Park on the white wall where my mum used to make me a flask. And I used to have my flask next to me, and I always remember Kelvin Skerritt jumping over about three or four players in a big, massive brawl and just throwing this punch.
Yeah, and they did Superman t-shirts, didn't they, after
that? Yeah, and then after that, they did these Superman t-shirts. But you're right, these things you remember as a kid. So if we can get the young kids involved, and that, you know, they can get in.
I told the tale of Rugby End when I was on there a few weeks ago. I remember I was in awe of Andy Gregory's brother. Not even Andy Gregory. It was Andy Gregory's
Bryn
brother.
Bryn Gregory?
Yeah, because it was Bryn.
It was Andy Gregory's brother.
What's his name?
Bryn Gregory.
Bryn Gregory.
I thought you said Green Gregory.
Bryn Gregory.
Green Vigo, you're thinking of.
He lived right corner from me, Bryn. But do you know what? It's funny you say that.
To my auntie Nora, next door to, actually.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because as a kid growing up, we used to always say, that's Andy Gregory's brother. And like you say, you're in awe of him.
Yeah. I was in awe of my sister in a younger day. She used to go raving with Sean Edwards. And they used to go to the Hacienda and whatnot. She said, Sean Edwards was going to ring up. She'll ring up and arrange a time. And I'd be sat all night next to the phone waiting for him to ring so I could pick it up and just say, yeah, I'll get her.
But do you know what? That is classic, because I think as a young lad, we grew up, I know you're a year older than me, so I'll get that one in, but we grew up same era.
You've aged well, haven't you? You're only a year younger.
Yeah. I'm not CEO, mate. I don't have the stress you have. But in that era, that 80s and 90s, that Wigan team, mate, they were Hollywood stars. Yeah. I always remember, like, Dennis Betts and Martin Afire driving round in the Nissan cars sponsored, Martin Afire sponsored by
Moon.
Nissan. And,
Nissan Moon it was.
Yeah, you know.
I think it was Nissan Moon.
I used to look at them cars and think, do you know what? I can't wait to play rugby league. I want to sponsor.
There's not much of it though. I mean, it's big occasions like a grand final where you get a free flag. I mean, how many times as players have you walked out a tunnel after a win or whatever, and a little kid hands you something, and you just think, what that is that piece of shit you've handed me there? They want it signed. Yeah, they want it signed, and it's shocking. Yeah. And you've done one of the worst signatures ever. But the look in their eyes when they see it, and they just go. Bang.
Do you remember, Woody, when you used to play for Wigan Schoolboys? We played for Wigan Schoolboys under 11s, 12, up to 16s, wouldn't say. And at the time, we was being coached by Graham West, who, at the time, was the head coach of Wigan, who were the world champions. So as 11-year-old, our head coach was Graham West, who was also the head coach of Wigan. Yeah. It's madness, isn't it, to think of that, to be like a Steve Price now being the head coach of Warrington Schoolboys, if it existed.
My mum was clearing the attic the other week, and she got everything out. She got all my trophies out.
What, four of them?
Wasn't many. But no, she got everything out. She got everything out.
Coming at you here.
Top tackler. She got everything out, and it was Wigan Schoolboys t-shirt was on there, and it said Paul Wood, and it said Wigan Schoolboys Rugby League underneath. Brilliant. It had the old Puma King badge on there, and I've still got it, and it's still like feels like yesterday, but obviously I can't get it on now, but it's just like feels so special.
It's too big.
Yeah, but it took me back to that era, and I was like really reminiscing about that. You know, I used to love going to Central Park watching the games.
We used to play games at Central Park, didn't we?
Yeah,
games on Central Park, even off every week.
Yeah, there was a lot of curtain raisers for the Wigan Schoolboys, school teams playing in finals tend to be a professional ground.
Yeah, I remember the first game at Central Park, I was 11 years of age. It was a curtain raiser for Wigan v Widnes when Widnes was reeling the pomp. Do you mean they had a fire?
Sorensen.
Do you know
Jonathan
mean?
Davis.
Jonathan Davis. He was real, real star-studded team. And scoring a try beside the post, it was like something like 18,000 on. It's 11-year-old scoring that try. It's like unbelievable. Remember, like it was yesterday, and they had the kick at goal and missed. I've never been the same since.
Ruined you.
But no. it was just unbelievable.
It was a special feeling though, changed in those.
Because there was on such a pedestal, and you're right, there was like Hollywood superstars, and all the kids in Wigan wanted to emulate them and be like the superstars. I think that's one of the reasons why Wigan is a hotbed for rugby league players.
100%.
Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable the amount of players that come out of Wigan.
Those Wigan rugby players, your Martin Afires, your Dennis Betts, your Phil Clarks, I don't know whether they do or not, but they had a profound impact on a lot of youngsters in our year, in our era, to play rugby league and become professional rugby league players. And my memory of playing at Central Park was Wigan Schoolboys under 11s. We played Bradford, Leon Price played, Wayne Price played for them. But my memory is, I put my bag down on Kelvin Skerritt's place and it said, Kelvin, spot, fuck off, on the seat. And as an 11-year-old, I thought, fuck it, he does this. I mean, Kelvin Skerritt's spot. I don't think anybody would argue with him. But great memories of playing in those. And I don't know, I'm sure kids get those same feelings we do now, but I don't know, it doesn't seem like we do offer the amateur game that much opportunity.
But the schoolboy program doesn't exist anymore, which I think is a crying shame.
Oh, I do.
You mean to play for Wigan Schoolboys and get your tie, get percent of the tie, and as you say, your jumper with your name on it, it's incredible, and I think that should be brought back.
There's a lot of things that don't seem to me. I mean, clubs are missing people's 100th game. Clubs are missing people's 250th game. You know, these are very important things in people's careers, and it sort of becomes a thing where it's like, and you're not going to say it yourself, are you? But people should be proud of that. People should be proud of 50 games.
Warrington,
I mean,
do that.
The average NRL career is like something ridiculous, like 20 games, the average career. And it's getting a little bit better, but it was something as low as like 16 games, the average NRL career.
Do you know what? I was gutted the other week because I was looking through my old Warrington tops, and I remember getting presented with my 300th appearance for Warrington. It was against Hull FC, and I can't find the jersey.
Who presented it with you?
I think it was Cromer.
I think it was Martin
Crompton.
Yeah. So what we do with Giant Warrants is when a player hits a milestone, so I think 100 the first one, then increments of 50 thereafter, we bring in either a family member or a former player to present him. Also, he's making his debut as well. I don't know if you saw, we had young Josh Thewlis, a 17-year-old kid, made his debut a couple of weeks back, and brought in his dad Kevin and his mum.
He went handy
brother,
as well. Handy
and presented him with his shirt, and Sky picked it up. And it is, it's something that lasts a long time for the players.
It's a real special, and it's not just special for the player, but the families as well. Yeah. I mean, the parents of young fellows like that, they.
The parents do the hard work.
You give up your whole life. You give up your weekends.
The parents do the hard work. Without my granddad picking me up from training at Warrington and dropping me off at Academy Games and taking me to the amateur game, it's just as much a special moment for them as it is for the player. They've done the hard work. You can't do it without them, so that should be celebrated.
Exactly. That's the same. I mean, the sacrifice that you take them to training Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday mornings. Yeah. If you think it back as well, you play for your schoolboys, you play for your counter, like Lancashire or North West. I mean, you're playing two or three games a week, so you was only enough every night, wasn't it?
Yeah. My grandma used to take me every single game. Never missed a game till I was about. Well, obviously, when I moved away from home, about 20 years old, didn't miss a single game. Used to give me $1. $1 a goal kick, $2 a try. And mate, I used to run off that field like that, probably collect $20-$30 each time.
Do you know what? My granddad used to take me every single rugby match, and then when I started playing professional, he bought a caravan and never come watching me. I bet he come an handful of games.
He's done his job then.
Yeah,
but he linked your card to his caravan payment,
eh? Yeah, bought a caravan in Lancaster and never come watching me, really. I bet he come an handful of games. But yeah, without those guys, you know what I mean? The players just don't exist, do they?
Yeah. That's it. Right. I've loved the nostalgia. I've loved the rugby league chat. We've gone 35 minutes over, but we've done the game a service.
Yeah. And it's better than any other rugby league podcast, let's be honest.
Oh, listen, just on that 40-20 podcast, I reckon they're the third best podcast. If I wanted to watch four grandpas chat, I'd watch Clint Eastwood films.
Mate, it is the third best in rugby league, but there's only three podcasts in rugby league. We're number one. I don't know who number two is, but...
Mate, we're eight episodes deep and we're just blowing them out of the water.
And what I will say, just before we go, Jai, mate, the feedback that I'm getting off some of the... from some of the people on social media is fantastic.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there's been...
They're saying to me they want rid of you.
No, someone inboxed me actually this week and just said, keep up the good work, it's really good.
It could have been Daryl Powell.
It might have been, yeah. I'll tell you his name. I'll tell you what, let's give him a shout out.
Go on then.
Let me see if I can find the message. One second.
Can't be that many, sure. It's just EE saying he hasn't paid his bill.
Chris Cunliffe has messaged me and said, me and the kids listened to two shows on the way to Leeds versus Wigan last week. And first thing, my daughter said this morning, can we listen to Jai and Woody on the way to Huddersfield versus Wigan?
No way. How good is that? You must have to turn it down every often, because there's a bit of swearing going on in there.
Make it worthwhile when we do this show, you know what I mean? So it's good feedback, that. And appreciate people listening.
It's good, mate. Pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, guys.
Really appreciate it. That was a really good insight into how things happen behind the scenes and what happens at the top of a Super League ladder. Woody, you're all right tonight as well.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
This is a Rugby AM production.